Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. It's not Groundhog Day for Spurs, but we're still talking about the same old shit. Fortunately, we found a way to mix up this week because we have a new guest stepping in for Brian Ashlock, who was not able to join us today because he is going completely off the grid, and I'm sure that's fine and nothing to worry about. We are joined by someone who is working on revolutionary ways to turn out the vote in what I can only presume is player of the match polls on Twitter. It's Michael Cayley. Michael, how goes the vote farming?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm player of the match polls are going to have like 100x the turnout in Brooklyn. I'm trying to figure out a voter turnout model for like, you know, what if only 160 people show up in the entire assembly district? It's going to be. I guess you can, it's a number of doors you can actually knock. That's our hope for some of these candidates, but it is, vibes aren't great out there.
Arsenal's finally in real trouble if you can get those kind of votes out of Brooklyn. So I'm happy to hear it. Next up, we have, someone who is working nonstop to repair, the pendulum. It's Ben Daniels. Ben, how is the pendulum these days? I can only, is it stuck? Has it, did it break? Is it just minute to minute? How's it doing?
It's poorly. It's poorly, Greg. Yeah, it was a very oscillating, wildly kind of week from bad to worse. But now it is firmly locked on. Meh. So, you know.
truly, we're back. We're back to where we've been for the last 4 years. It's just wonderful. Yeah, we have two games to talk about this week, our 2-0 loss to Chelsea and our 4-2 loss to Liverpool. Believe it or not, there is, I think, a lot to discuss here. Yeah, so Ben, I'll start with you. Do you think we're going to be able to hire Nuno in September?
I think it would be really hard to prize him away from Forest. He has really turned the ship around there. And they have enough money to, you know, extract some serious concessions out of us. So I think that ship has sailed. What might have been?
What might have been? Michael, how concerned are you? Are you more concerned about Spurs after these last two matches? You might be the worst person to ask that question to, but I'm still curious to hear your answer.
Yeah, no, I really am, because like just aggressively like chuck everything in the average, but like. They really did get the snot beaten out of them by Liverpool. And Liverpool beat the snot out of a lot of people. Like, that does happen. But, you know, you chuck that in the average, the average gets a little bit worse. And the average coming into these games was elevated by the fact that they had not played Arsenal or Liverpool. Or Chelsea, for that matter, who are certainly in the, like, top eight teams in the Premier League. And so, were we like a little too high on them? Is now what we're looking back on more like, yeah, that's about kind of what you'd expect if you took Tottenham and you removed Harry Kane, and it's a little bit less like Ange has raised their level, like a little bit less. It's a little bit worse. You know, it's still not terrible, but it's definitely a little bit worse when you have a game where you're just that bad. And then that's on top of the Newcastle match where they were terrible, the Chelsea match where they were not good, and the Arsenal match where they were really quite good and lost anyway, so fuck everything.
I think that's what I personally found so discouraging. That Liverpool match, while it's never good to go to Anfield and do that, like you said, Liverpool is a good team, and sometimes shit like that just happens, especially for a team as flawed as the Spurs team. The Chelsea match, and I am accounting for the fact that Chelsea are probably a little bit better than I'd like them to be. I think both of these matches, you could say this about, but they just looked, especially when you compare it to that Liverpool match, like lifeless or like just not as good. Like, I mean, I don't know what you want to ascribe it to, but I mean, does that concern you at all, Michael, that like, or is that just like they got gassed up for one match and let down after that? But I found it very concerning that it was kind of a listless response to what we were able to do against Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's very hard for me to read a lot into things like that. I thought that the press was not strong against Chelsea in the first half. And then the second half, they, you know, Ange overhauls the midfield and they do a much better job of getting and holding the ball. And then it's Liverpool, like, that wasn't listless. It was terrible. But everyone was working very hard and running very hard. They were just making mistakes, which is a very different kind of thing. And, like, it's easy to sort of collapse all of the different kinds of bad play, but they were really distinctly different kinds of bad play, which I think were related to the distinctly different personnel on the field, and it's a little bit hard for me to sort of like construct a single narrative for it. It was bad. You chuck in the average gets worse. But like, I didn't think it was like the same thing happening. I thought different bad things happened in different situations.
I think we could say, to sort of draw a common theme, is we are bad in the same ways consistently, and it's just which bad way is going to be the problem that bites us in the ass more this week. Sometimes it's set-piece defending. Sometimes it's transition defending. Sometimes it's possession in midfield and transition into attack. And sometimes it's that our forwards can't create anything. Like, those are all lingering problems that are kind of always there that we usually make it work enough anyway. And, yeah, sometimes one of those things matches up particularly badly against an opponent or has a bad day at the office, and that known vulnerability becomes catastrophic and it all goes bad.
But I think you look at sort of the arc of the season, and, you know, obviously things have not been as good in the second half as they were in the first. And, you know, you can certainly isolate some of our issues to when we were having a major injury crisis. But, you know, like, even with some of the bad results, like, sort of mixed in, like Newcastle, like you said, Michael, like, the springs immediately to mind. Fulham is another one. Where I think what you're talking about, Ben, is very valid. Like, there does seem to be an accumulation of problems that has been piling up recently that have made a lot of these issues a lot worse. And I think, like, the easiest one to identify is we're on our third choice left back, who isn't really a left back. And, you know, I think that's causing a lot of problems for Spurs right now. And then you've just got this issue with, like, I mean, I think it's really pronounced in the midfield, but you could probably talk about our forward line with this in the same way. Of, you have a lot of guys who are either fighting injuries, fighting fatigue, or just, I don't know, burnout. I don't know what it is, but, like, you know, Sarr's carrying a back injury and is clearly only capable of being good for X amount of time in a match, and sometimes not even that. Bentancur is almost exactly the same. Madison is even worse than those two. And Bissouma is just, you know, I don't know if that's fatigue or burnout or just, like, what, but, like, you never know what you're going to get out of that guy, and it's usually not very good. I don't know. I think a lot of stuff's piling up at the end of the year, and it's really affecting us right now. And I think it's more concentrated than it was earlier, and it's making some of these issues that we've seen throughout the season. I mean, Michael, you were talking about the average. I think there's something to be said for that, but I think some of this stuff is a lot worse right now than it was earlier in the year.
I think that some of that stuff was that stuff's been bad large chunks of the season. Like, this is what, as Ben was saying, like, there have been we've seen these issues recur again and again, that there are, you know, that there are that like transition defense has been a problem coming through different areas, that not being able to retain possession between the midfield and the defense has been a problem, that there are games where the team is not able to execute the press at the level of intensity, and there's a lack of creativity in the forward line. All of those things sort of have come up, and they've come up a lot this season. But generally what's happened is they've been balanced out by good things rather than they've been fixed. It's that, like, you know, there's like the other thing that outweighs it. And the other thing that outweighs it ran very heavily through Son and Madison. And so I think what's happened is we are getting a, like, a microscope on those problems, because Son and Madison aren't doing good things to take the focus away from them, more than that those things have gotten like a lot worse. The Liverpool game was worse, but I struggle to like make a lot of claims about that, because the main thing that's happened over the last month is that Spurs have played better teams, and the month before that they were playing worse teams. Like, I think you average that out, you don't get that much of an effect. But I do think that Son being in this slump, and I don't know what it is, whether it's fatigue or just like, you know, a bad run, and Madison, there seems to be like, it seems like he's not fit. He's not playing. Like, that he came back from this injury and hasn't been as good. I think that those make a really big difference in terms of making us focus on the problems, rather than the problems are that much larger than they were.
Yeah, I think 100%. There have been some key players on this team who have been at their best very good. At the other end, Vicario and Van de Ven have been just phenomenal in mopping up a lot of transition issues. Romero's been very good in different ways, but you know, when they can't cover for those systemic failures, that's it. Like, they're still happening. They were just, Van de Ven is lightning and was getting there and stopping it before it was goal. And that was the difference between winning and losing a lot of weeks. You know, if we're not building well, sometimes we're pressing well enough that we can just get that quick ball into Johnson, who can square it across the front of goal, whatever. When we had, not to get too in the weeds, when we had, you know, Johnson trying to dribble past Mark Cucurella and couldn't do it 9 times, I think Cucurella won 9 ground duels against Brennan Johnson. And mostly it was just Johnson dribbling into his leg as he tried to cut inside. You know, it's hard to come back from that. You know, against Liverpool, we did see at the end, I know I'm really jumping around and we're not getting this systematically, but when Lo Celso and Madison
came on. No one wants
to
go over these games systematically.
Yeah. Well, when Madison and Lo Celso came on and were able to start moving the ball vertically quickly, it opened us up. And, you know, yes, Liverpool were kind of on the beach at 4-0 up, but like, we started attacking in ways that we haven't really seen us attack in a long time. And so, you know, and we scored 2 goals. Like, that's the kind of thing that we need to just run hotter longer. And we've talked about this a lot. A lot of this is just personnel issues. Like, there aren't enough guys who are that good to do these things on the regular. You know, Brennan Johnson is very good when he can get the ball in space behind and play his one little move across the front of goal. When he can't do that because we don't have anybody feeding him the ball in those positions, it's useless. And we don't have any other weapons to compensate for that. So, you know, I think the thing that's frustrating to me is that the Arsenal game was, like Michael said, good other than the 3 goals we conceded in the first half. And Liverpool and Chelsea were going through rocky enough patches of their own that it seemed like we could have done more. And the fact that we didn't is what really stings. Like, yes, it was a gauntlet of 4 terrible matches against 4 really good teams. But, like, you know, Chelsea just got hammered by Arsenal a few weeks ago. Liverpool just lost the title at Everton. Like, they're not invincible teams. And you want more.
And you saw, like you said, Liverpool might have been on the beach, but it's not like you can't get at them. Like, I mean, Liverpool was frankly, I mean, you know, you went about how lucky Liverpool is against us. That's maybe a relative conversation over the course of the season, but they were lucky that wasn't a 1-point, 1-goal match for the last like 10 minutes or whatever. I mean, you know, we were able to reel stuff in. There's things we can do. Now, I think, you know, a lot of Spurs fans talk about Ange's picks as Ange's, you know, sort of decisions in terms of squad selection. And I think we would have liked to see him try more. Certainly my biggest one is like, why is Lo Celso not out on pitch more? Clearly, I think Richarlison is limited in his ability to play minutes right now, which just is what it is. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. Because there are, when you get past your frustration, you watch these games and you can see some green shoots. Like, there's that clip of us playing against Liverpool where we're playing the ball out of the back. And it's like, oh, this is what Ange wants us to do. There is stuff there. Stretching the ball vertically, but like we're playing like we're trying, it's like it's almost like we're trying to play safe or something with this midfield, which again, I'm not sure there's any good answers at this point in the year, and it's just turning into a disaster. Like, we're just getting passed through so easily, and going back to what Michael said, conversely, it's like one thing if you're getting passed through, if you're maybe creating a lot of threat on your own with guys like Son and Madison. But when you're not doing any of that or virtually none of that, it just becomes, you know, it becomes a shit show. And if you give a team enough, a good team enough shots, it, you know, you're going to pay for it eventually, unless you're, you know, Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you come into this season and the team has brought in some new players, but very much players you want to build around for the medium term. And you have a new manager with an extremely distinctive style. You know, it becomes very clear in preseason when, like, Sergio Reguilón is tucking into midfield against Barcelona and Oliver Skip is making runs the 6-yard box against Barcelona. And I'm still mad we didn't win that game. We were actually, like, really good. It was a lot of fun. And, like, okay, we're doing something completely new. And then over the course of the season, like, Tottenham's statistical profile, like, you can, you know, you can look at, like, the goal difference, the XG difference and all of that, but the stylistic statistical profile changes completely. The team alters the way they play from the very beginning. You have this, like, you know, Tottenham, I think last season, Tottenham got into the penalty area more this season, like, in the some of their lowest penalty area touch matches than they had in all but, like, a few games last season. Like, it's just a complete overhaul of the way they play. When you watch it, like, you see all of the different shapes that they are moving into, none of which are things that we were used to seeing before. And so the manager has overhauled the team. He has got them playing a distinctive way, which is new, which is, like, you can describe, which you can show, you know, objective evidence for in the statistics, and their level of play has, like, not improved a ton. Like, that's what the first season is gonna be, especially when you lose Harry Kane. Like, I thought it had been a little better than that. I thought that the level had been improved a little bit more, that, like, Ange Ball was doing a little bit more. And maybe it's not, but, like, from the beginning of the season, I would have been happy with that. Like, a number of the signings are pretty good. Some of the reason you could argue that the average is lower is some weird injury stuff. The squad was not built to be resilient to injuries and has gotten really killed in a couple of places. It turned out it wasn't resilient. That, like, I think they knew it wasn't resilient, but they were choosing to. And, like, it makes this summer's job harder because there's more things to fix. But, like, the manager has a style and can implement that style is a really, really positive indicator. And the team that has these obvious flaws has to fix them. It's sort of like, that's where we are. And so I think that we can make way too much of the arc of the season when, like, when you look at it, like, these are the positive steps in a rebuild that's going to take some more time. And, like, very early in the season, people got way out over their skis that, like, there wasn't a rebuild. Partway, like, but, like, two-thirds of the way through the season, people got somewhat more realistic about the idea that, like, you know, we're not winning a freaking title with this team. That's not even close. Still, it seemed like the rebuild was a little bit less large than it had seemed at the beginning at last summer. And now I feel like it feels about like it felt last summer. Like, that's not bad, especially when you consider that Ange has demonstrated, like, really distinct coaching skills that I think are a very positive indicator going forward. So, like, you know, that's where we are. It's the first part of the season, you gotta, like, calm down about that. The fact of where we are now compared to, like, two-thirds of the way through the season is a little bit disappointing, but it's okay.
I think there's a more positive case than this because I think the injuries are very, like, very important. And you're right that, like, depth is going to be an issue and was always going to be an issue. The injuries that we suffered were to such key figures that it's really hard to draw big sweeping conclusions. Like, we ran hot those first 10 games, but like that was still a market improvement, I think, over where we ended with Conte in that stretch period. And then we lose Madison, gosh. And we spend the next few games just totally flailing. And Bissouma falls apart. We lose a lot of the key players who are making that 10-game stretch functional. And then Ange, to his credit, sort of reinvented the team with Richarlison up top, and we went on another really good run when he was scoring really freely. We were creating chances of the type Richarlison needs to get on the end of, and then Richarlison goes down. And it was like we didn't have that third reinvention in us. When Madison comes back, he's not the same guy. I think Ange's probably biggest criticism is maybe doesn't realize the limitations of some of these guys he's trying to make work rather than coming up with another way to make the healthy guys work. Like guys like Lo Celso, who I know it's charitable to put him in the healthy bucket because that guy hasn't been fit for more than a week in his whole career. But you know, I think there are things that he could have done differently to sort of mitigate that. And we didn't. And that's where I think it's frustrating. But the top end talent on this team, I still feel very good about. And I think the way that we have looked when we have enough of that talent healthy and available has given me a lot of hope. And the other side of that is, well, we need a lot of players then that we don't have to make that sustainable over the course of a season. And I think the hope was just that the rebuild wasn't going to be as big as it is. And the reality is that, no, we need more guys because some of our guys are just bums. And that's unfortunate, but Emerson Royale, see you at the Glue Factory. Good luck.
I think we're going to do a first for this podcast because I'm going to give the negative contrast to Ben here. I think what's a little bit discouraging to me about the last few weeks is I think some of these players, even accounting for the super hot start, like I'm more skeptical of some of these players than I thought I would be at this point in the year. Like I hope Madison can get healthy, but like that the second half of the season is concerning to me. Richarlison, whatever, like you said, that guy's been healthy for like 2 weeks in his entire life. But Basuma's downturn in form, the way it hasn't even gone from like stellar to like fine. And it's just like, you know, it looks like he's never played football before half the time. That's concerning. The Bentancourt is still fighting these injuries in a way that like maybe I should have expected, but I was kind of hoping this guy would bounce back. I mean, this guy came back from a catastrophic injury, had another pretty serious injury. I'm probably not being fair to him, but like again, I thought Bentancourt was not a thing we had to worry about. I thought that was a guy who's going to come back, get healthy, and be, you know, this just fucking amazing midfielder that we saw for the last 2 years. You know, and I hope that Uruguay doesn't make him play in like the Copa America this summer and he can actually get some rest and we'll know one way or the other. But I just think like, especially in midfield, I have, you know, just a few more questions than I was really hoping to have back in January. And, you know, I think that's even accounting for understanding that we started super hot and that's not necessarily going to be what you get going forward.
I think the thing I want to say about those players is like, you're right. In January, we thought one thing, but in the summer, I don't think those were the same thoughts. Like Bissouma was still a guy who hadn't done anything for us. And it was kind of miraculous that he looked as good as he did for that window. You know, we were still kind of expecting he might be a guy to replace. Bentancourt, an injury like that just takes time. And he hasn't had the time. He came back fast from it, but I think he will get back to being good again. But like, time is the only thing that's going to fix that. Sarr is another guy who was a big question mark going into the season and exceeded a lot of expectations. I think we all believed in him, but really demonstrated that. So, like, yes, he's come back to earth and not been the guy we thought he was in January, but, like, that's still a really encouraging guy for next season in the future. I think all of the back line, Vicario included, has, like, Nicky Van de Ven was a guy who we thought was our backup choice to somebody else. And we barely even heard of this guy and has, you know, been light years ahead of that. Pedro Porro, we didn't even think could play right back in this system and has exceeded those expectations. Destiny, great. You know, another catastrophic injury at a really bad time. And Romero has stepped up to an incredible degree. So I think a lot of what our assessment of these guys now is based on a season of very good performances that exceeded our expectations going into this season and have now clouded and made us feel worse because it's not all coming together. I think there's only a few guys that I think we have a worse opinion about now than we did on August 31st. And those are the guys that I think we're concerned about in the rebuild. Guys like Kulusevski, God love him. Son, maybe, Richarlison, you know. But, like, yeah, by and large.
I think it's a really important sort of counterfactual to think about how every time we go over this, like, man, there's a lot to be done in the rebuild. Oh, there's some players I'm not loving. No one's talking about the back five.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was entirely non-obvious. Like, Vicario was our second choice. Like, you know, there's a lot of these players have worked out reasonably well. We need more depth back there. But I think that, you know, and it turned out that especially Bissouma's, like, you know, he, like, filled up the stat sheet like crazy for about 15 games. That just kind of feels like a false dawn. And so there's going to be need to be additions there. But there need to be additions in midfield. There need to be additions in the front line. And there needs to be depth at the back. And, like, that doesn't feel impossible. That feels like a big job, but there's a ton of money, and we actually hired people who are, like, should be good at spending it.
I think a lot of Spurs fans are getting out over their skis when they're talking about not bringing Timo Werner back. I don't think I should stop us from buying a star winger. But I like watching these last two matches. Like, I know Timo Werner has comical finishing abilities, but Jesus Christ, like, at least he keeps fullbacks honest. Like, you know, like watching Brennan Johnson just run into Cucurella on Chelsea for, like, you know, felt like a dozen times.
Nine times.
You know, yeah, well, yeah, there you go. So, I mean, I feel like at least Timo Werner, like, whatever else he does when it's time to shoot the ball, like, at least he's making their life hell for, like, 90 minutes or however long he's in a match. You know, there's a guy, like, we're talking about things we don't need to solve. Like, I think there's a, you know, you need to upgrade, you need a starter, but, like, we're going to be in the Europa League next year, probably. We're going to be in
the European Conference League.
Yeah, well, or that. But my point is, you're going to need depth, and especially with the way Ange runs his team, you're going to need depth. And you have a forward who can actually, like, play competently. Like, I think we'd be fools to get rid of him at this point. Yeah, getting back to the games, we'll talk about the structure of the roster in a minute. I know we'd rather talk about that than because that's looking forward. And I appreciate the optimism, because usually I'm the one having to do that here. That Chelsea match, and I know I'm being totally irrational, that fucked me off more than any, like, of our bad performances here. And I know the Newcastle performance was worse. Probably the Fulham performance was worse. Liverpool match was probably worse. But we rolled in there to a team, and I know Chelsea's better than their record shows, but that we rolled in there and just looked so weak in that first half, and that we had so much trouble doing, like, you know, I know we had that period where we were controlling the game in the second half. And this is another game that you could really point to set pieces as being a real problem for Spurs. But, man, that – I know, like, I'm, like, weirdly – I've got, like, you know, like, ex-girlfriend syndrome or whatever with Mauricio Pochettino. But I do. But I feel like this is fucking Chelsea. They're not having a great year. This is, like – that last match against them was a fucking travesty. Like, I mean – and this is, like, maybe the most juiceless Chelsea team we've seen in, like – ages in terms of, like, guys who actually care about all the shitty stuff Chelsea players care about, you know, like, that we didn't, like, give them a real run for their money, which is, you know, going towards 12-year-olds in Brazil, you know, like, it really bothers me that, like, we just came out so flat, and that we came out so flat after such a good performance against Arsenal.
I mean, the first half was legitimately bad, but, like, around this game, they won 5-0 against West Ham, and
right after they beat us.
Yep. And they came back and drew 2-2 with Villa. Like, they've just been playing, they got beat up by Arsenal, but they've just been playing good football. They've been playing good football the second half of the season, and it's just, like, not that weird.
I mean, I guess seeing Villa take
home against us.
Seeing Villa take a point off of Chelsea after we made Villa look pedestrian, it's just like the transitive property of football isn't real, but, like, it feels like it should have been, like, okay, well, Villa can do this, and we can beat Villa. why can't we hang with this fucking team?
Yeah, it's not the result. It's that we just like I could have taken like a 3-2 that went back. And, I mean, I wouldn't have been happy about it, and I would have probably overreacted and been a baby about it. But like, I'd rather have seen that than us just like fucking roll over like we did in this match. And yeah. You know,
I mean,
like,
if we concede, especially in the first half, if we'd only conceded one in the first half rather than two, and like they didn't.
No, we did. We did concede one in the first half. But,
yeah, that's right. If that game had gone 1-1, that would not have been a weird outcome in that game. The Spurs did not play like if we'd gotten a point off of Liverpool, that would have been like a travesty. But like. Getting a point off of Chelsea in that game, that would have been relatively normal. Things just didn't quite work out. Like they did come out like, you know, the problem in the first half was not having an active press that could disrupt Chelsea in possession and get a handle on the ball. And that was bad, but like I don't think that like the 2-0 is a good story of the game, and I don't think it's like a common problem.
I think the problem with the scoreline and really how the goals were scored, there was a storyline there. It was set pieces are a problem. This keeps happening. Ange says, no, it's not. If I thought I could fix this team by fixing set pieces, we'd be fixed by now. And then it happened fucking exactly the same way. And like, that's the kind of thing that you're right. On balance, a 1-1 game is probably what we watched. But what we did see was Ange refusing to address a problem. And people are already ready to be mad about the way this season's collapsing. And then to see that happen exactly the way everybody predicted it was going to happen is like, that's going to get knives out for a manager. Like, and that's why I think everyone was so fucking pissed, because the context of losing to Chelsea is bad, and losing to Chelsea in such a predictable way. That's just, yeah, that just feels very bad. Well, even though
the thing about it is, you know, you look at it, and I don't think Ange is, like, wrong. This team has bigger or more, like, substantial things to work on than set pieces. But also, working on your set piece defense or execution is a relatively sort of, like, this isn't, like, developing, like, Pep Guardiola passing schemes. This is, like, a thing you concentrate on. And, you know, you can really, like, wall this off in a lot of ways. Not entirely, I understand that. But, like, you can just hire a guy to deal with this or dedicate time to it. And, you know, and I appreciate like our personnel is not very great in the air, and that's a problem too. But, you know, if we were just like average at set piece defense this year, like we'd probably be even with Villa right now, if not ahead of them, you know? And like, you know, I think Ange is right in terms of like, what does Champions League mean? But like, I don't know. It'd be nice to fucking have it. Cause like, I feel like Villa have probably like not been much better than us this year, maybe even worse if you take set pieces out of it. And, you know, why are they going to be in the Champions League next year? Probably set pieces. Also, the Bundesliga is buying Champions League matches, but, you know, that's neither here nor there, except for today, apparently. But I don't know. It's like, it is an easy thing to fit, and it's frustrating because, like, we have other problems, yes, but this is a very easy to fix problem.
And Liverpool is a great antidote to that.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, there's people who run football operations at Tottenham, and they can just hire a set piece coach. Like, they have to do it. It's important, and this is Spurs have been conceding too many goals from set pieces, and then the Chelsea and Arsenal matches. Spurs conceded way more goals from set pieces than like the poor quality of their set piece defending deserved. Usually guys miss some chances. Like, you know, two of the guys who scored crucial set piece goals against us were Nick Jackson and Kai Havertz. Those guys just often miss. And then like the game is different, even though Spurs did play badly on those set pieces. So like, this like crystallized it, and things went bad at the wrong time. But it's absolutely the case that they've just not defended well on set pieces, and we don't seem to have like dedicated set piece planning. And Ange says that, and that's dumb. So someone should fix that problem. But like, I don't think that Ange is the sort of coach who will like, you know, refuse to work with the football operations who say this is what we need to do. Like, there's a collaboration there. It should work. I don't see a reason to think that should really change. I don't know what Ange is supposed to say in the press conferences. Like, you know, I'm going to fire Jednak. Like, well, what's he going to do? You know, this isn't going to get solved right now. It was a mistake.
I mean, I don't think he has before, to fire Emil Jednak, but he can say, like, you know, he has said that, you know, Jednak and Mason are his assistant coaches who also have responsibility for set pieces in different contexts. He can say, maybe we need to spend more time on that. That's a problem for this summer. Right now, I'm focused on getting the team playing. And, like, just give a gesture towards, like, yep, this is a problem, but it's not the problem. But he loves rejecting the premise of every question in every interview to the point where it backfires. And he says things that are like, we all have this question, Ange, and we would like an answer that shows that you are taking our concerns seriously. And obviously, that's not important in the scheme of things, but emotionally, as fans, we're pissed. And he's usually a very good speaker and knows how to say things that make fans want to run through a wall for him. And this is such a rare and tin-eared gaffe that it sucks. And he knew it. I think after it came back up after the Chelsea game, he changed his tune. He started saying things more like we wanted to hear him say weeks ago. You're right. This is not a thing that's going to get fixed now. And it's there are people who are losing faith in the coach. And one of the reasons for that is this man too set in his ways? And one of those ways might be rejecting the modern game of football that requires dedicated attention to these discrete moments of goal scoring opportunities. I am concerned that that's something that he dogmatically doesn't believe in. And if the club says we should get a guy like Gianni Vio or someone who's that for defensive set pieces, he's like, no, you do the stuff behind the scenes. This is on the football field and this is how I run my club. That's a problem. And we don't know which version of that guy he is. And that's the concern. And I hope you're right. Cause it is an easy fix.
Yeah. It's certainly the case that, like, if we start hearing that the football operations folks want to do one thing and Ange is like, nah, I got my ways. Like, that's bad, but that specific thing has, like, never been reported. That is, you know, it's plausible. It's not like it hasn't, we can't rule it out, but I think that it's reasonable to be hopeful. And, like, Ange has, you know, the way he's talked about, like, the way the front office works and the way that recruitment works, he's been, you know, very modern in his outlook on that. So I'm reasonably hopeful.
The fact that this happened against the set piece thing happened against, like, just like our two worst fucking rivals at, like, the wrong part of the year. Like, because I think, like, you, especially, like, I mean, again, we're not talking about this game, but you go back to that Arsenal game and, like, it's like you said, Michael, like, if they just don't hit their shots that day. If, like, because, you know, like, I think was it the Arsenal game where Romero could have had a hat trick on set pieces?
Yep.
But, you know, it was, like, normal. Like, no one was doing anything wrong. It's just his header went a little bit over or it got saved or whatever. Like, it was just, like, yeah, that we just have eaten shit. Like, and I have totally overreacted this. You guys both know this. Like, I have been very furious at it. But it's mostly that, like, it's been against these two teams that for one reason or another, I really want to see us beat. I want to deny Arsenal a title and I want Pochettino to eat shit. Like, it's been so tough to swallow. And then, like, on top of that, the fucking Liverpool match happens. Where at least, like, you know, for whatever reason, at least there was like 10, 15 minutes of, like, looking dangerous in that match, which was, like, again, I don't want to, like, get too carried away with that, but fuck, after the Chelsea match, that was downright encouraging.
Yeah, it sucked, and I think it's important to have, like, a little crowbar separation between it sucked and it means something. Like, it just sucked.
Yeah, and it's, again, I understand all the rational reasons for it. I think just in your head, you're trying, like, in my head at least, you try not to, like. Like, there's that thought of, like, I'm just making excuses for the team. When, like, these excuses or explanations, however you want to phrase it, are, like, lots of guys are hurt. Lots of guys are tired. The squad construction is flawed in the first place. We were lucky early in the year. We're not lucky now. Like, these things are all true, but it feels like excuses, if you know what I mean. And, you know, I don't know. Like, and watching Ange have, like, a real misstep in terms of, like you were saying, Ben, like, talking about this stuff, it's just very easy for all this shit to like pile on. And I don't know. It's like, and now it seems like we have much more work to do in the summer. And the fact that I think what's really like the thing that, because I think you're right in that we all would have taken this position at the beginning of the year. This is good. This is ahead of schedule, not as ahead of a schedule as we thought, but it's ahead of schedule. Certainly, I think we all would have bit your hand off to be in the position we're in now at the beginning of the season. But the fact of the matter is we are not going to be in the Champions League, and the team that's going to take fourth is not some, is not a team I think is significantly better than us. And they have just, it feels to me at least like they've kind of gotten away with it in a way that we haven't. They've played a little better than us. They don't have some of the deficiencies we have, but you know, Villa's going to be in the Champions League. We're not. And certainly coming out of the Aston Villa match, you know, it felt like we had a real opportunity to take it, and that we've kind of like stumbled after that is just really annoying.
Well, I think the thing that we should all remind ourselves, make us feel better, is one, Villa had a 6-month head start under Emery, and two, the guy who put Villa's team together is now in charge of our recruitment. So, hey, if it worked out for them, feel good about next year.
Clement Longley, welcome back to Tottenham. That's right. So yeah, like, cause I feel like a lot of Spurs fans have reevaluated their sort of like look at Spurs' future. You know, I think we've got the sense of where you guys stand on Ange, where we stand on Ange. Cause like, I'm a little frustrated with the last few weeks, but fundamentally I think he's a good manager and, you know, I'm interested to see where he takes us next year. What are you thinking of this summer? Where do you think Spurs need to put their attention?
Yeah. I mean, Spurs really need a deep lying passer in midfield. They need someone who is going to show for the ball, move the ball around safely, be an easy outlet when our, you know, somewhat less secure players, especially the fullbacks, get on the ball. Someone who's going to be able to do more in that position than Bissouma has done. You know, Bentancur can do this to some degree. I'd like it to be someone with a larger range of passing, so like it doesn't have to be Madison dropping all the way back. I think that's a crucial spot, and that's the one where I'm the most concerned that I don't hit. We don't have a ton of evidence that Spurs are targeting that specific area, so that's one of the big things that I'm sort of watching when I'm watching rumors, are like, you know, to what degree are we targeting someone like that? And then we just need better forwards. Yeah, I think clearly we need someone who can carry more of the creative weight from the wing. You know, we're all raving about Werner, who is not a great dribbler, because he shows for the ball, he gets the ball, he moves it forward, he can get the ball in the penalty area, and you know, he's not great at it, but he's good at it. And we've really been lacking that from the wing. I think we need someone like that. The problem with the forward line is that it's easier for me to come up with at least a few names that seem like, you know, relatively affordable. Like I think, you know, Angelo Stiller from Stuttgart, if we can pry him away, Palacios from Leverkusen, both be really, really good pickups for that sixth role. At the wing, like there's the market is tougher, and I'm interested to see how Spurs play it. There's also just like more players to move out. Like, which do you target like a 9 because Richarlison is going? Do you spend a huge amount of money on a winger who's not necessarily there yet because you believe in them and you believe in what Ange's system does for them? And so then, you know, Werner is out, or then you're sticking with Richarlison. Do you trust Richarlison's health? Like, you know, there's the decision making at the forward line is also dependent on a lot of questions about our current forwards that are harder for me to answer. And we need to take swings at potential stars. It needs to be guys who can be stars, and they just need to get those swings right. And everything I see on the forward line feels right to me. We're in the right ballpark of things. The other question is, to what degree should there be like an 8-10 tweener? To what degree can this team add someone who can sort of play Madison's role or maybe play Sar's role? And I think that's an interesting spot. I'm weirdly hopeful about Lucas Bjerkvall being able to just like do that as a backup. That's the other spot that I would think of as somewhere Spurs need to get, other than just like, you know, they just need depth in the back line.
What's that, Greg? You're doing your best Brian impression right now?
I am doing it. Yeah, sorry. You know, I was hitting the slopes for a second there. You know, left my mask on. I really do think, I know I'm doing that thing that we've done on this podcast, Spurs fans do on Twitter, Spurs fans do in the like dark confines of their own homes. I do think Europa League in some ways will be helpful for this, because it will give us a venue for squad experimentation, to run guys out. A guy like Bjerkvall, for instance, is going to get like lots of matches. Like fringier guys are going to be able to get those matches. And, you know, I think that will be helpful for some of this. I think the flip side of that is it's going to be harder to get some of those stars that you're talking about. I know, I'm not sure he is the guy. He's the guy I like the most, but like a Nico Williams, for instance, is he going to be as interested in coming to a Tottenham Hotspur if we're just in the Europa League? I don't know. But I think you're right. We need to get some stars. We need to get some difference makers. If we are targeting all these children, that's where I think the Europa League works in our favor, because a guy like Bjerkvall might not be ready to start, like, you know, in the Premier League all the time at the beginning of the season, but like letting him sort of ease in Europe, in the Europa League, you know, in the sort of wilds of Eastern Europe, like, you know, that might be a good way to get him up to speed.
Besides Harry Kane, I don't believe that has ever actually happened one time.
Oh, I'm lying to myself. Yeah, that's not going to happen. No, it won't. But it's a nice story to tell myself in, you know, May.
Yeah, I mean, I do, like, you know, Ange just talked about Champions League, and I do really buy his line that he doesn't want a player coming to Spurs because they're coming for the Champions League. He's coming to Spurs because he believes we're a club who are running a project that will be in the Champions League a lot. That's really the thing. And we have money, and money talks. And I think we are at this point in our sort of arc as a club big enough that I don't think most guys we're targeting are going to be put off by like, who the fuck is Tottenham Hotspur? You're not even in the Champions League. Like, I think we're past that. Maybe that's naive, but we do have the money to get us over that hump to the extent we're not. Yeah, I think in terms of bodies, like, I think we all know where the glaring holes are. I think there's definitely some balance questions, but like our midfield construction right now has, you know, we talked about this a little before the pod, but like that seems to be an area where Ange is struggling to identify who is even three guys he can roll out there and feel good about at any given time. He's chopped and changed it between the last four matches every game. And, you know, I think the hope was that, okay, we've got Sarr, Bendicorp, Basuma, Madison. You need two other guys to fill out, you know, a six-man rotation for those three positions. And I think now we're kind of like, we've got Madison and Sarr. We maybe need four guys. Maybe we can make one of Bendicorp and Basuma work. Maybe Bjerkvall, you know, comes back and is ready. But I think there's a lot of bodies in midfield that need to happen. And I think we can approach that in a lot of different ways. We can get some youth guys, we can get some old vets, we can get some stars, whatever, but like we have a lot of bodies that need to be brought in that specific position. I think our forward line less so, like, I think, you know, Johnson's limited but is there. Son, God willing, he has another couple years in him. You know, that's two starting guys hopefully locked up already. And we're just sort of filling in around that. I don't know. It's a lot of business. And I think the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh yeah. And then also we need a left center back, cause we don't have one of those. And you know what? Both fullbacks could really use an understudy, and God
forbid. What if we need to buy a starting center back or center forward rather? What if we need to buy like replace for Charleston in the team? Like that's a lot of work.
Right. They're like, of our 25 man squad, there's like eight guys I like love and like 11 guys I'm like happy with to roll into next season. And we're not going to buy 14 guys this summer. We're just not.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's also, like, there's players where if Spurs' evaluation of Richarlison is that he can be fit for a season, and his production level this season is very, very good on a per 90 basis. If they were, if Spurs were to say, look, Richarlison's good, we like him, like, that's a totally reasonable claim. I think you can make very reasonable claims about Bentancur as well that way. And I just don't know what their read is. And like, there's a read you can have of Werner that is like that. Like, sure, okay, that's our guy. And so part of this, like, doing a transfer window isn't just about identifying your targets. It's about synthesizing that with your evaluation of the team. And there's still a fair number of question marks for the evaluators to look at this current roster of who they think, you know, reasonably is good enough to be here and be part of the team that they want to build.
I will say with Richarlison, I think that's going to be a very easy decision for the club to make. And I think it's going to be, is a Saudi Arabian team interested in taking him? And is Richarlison interested in going there? Because I don't think we're going to sell him to anybody else. And, you know, now on top of that, you have to make the decision, like, do we like him? Is he good enough and healthy enough to contribute to us? And, you know, but if Spurs can get their money back for him, I have a feeling they're going to take
Saudi Arabia money overrides that whole analysis. If 40 million, 50 million come in, it's buy Richarlison and we'll go somewhere else. If it doesn't come in, then you have to ask a lot of questions.
But the problem is, if it comes in, you're going to have to spend big on a striker. I mean, I don't know if they're going to do that.
I don't know that you do, because you have Son, and Son is a good striker when he has service to feed him in behind. Like, he's a very specific striker, but we have used him very well when we've had guys fit enough to make that happen. And so if you get Son at your striker, you can buy big at a new left winger now, because that's not where Son's standing. And then get a young guy who you believe in will take, you know, the mantle from Son in a couple of seasons or a season, whatever. Like Michael said, it's a balance.
All Brandon Johnson can do is receive the ball in the penalty area. Like, maybe he can be a striker. I don't. There's lots of ideas possible. The other thing I think is important to say, though, is that because Spurs are rich and have a bunch of money, and because Spurs have a bunch of holes in the squad, they can also be like just looking for value. And some of the stories out there so far are clearly like Daniel Levy has a good spreadsheet, certainly a spreadsheet that he trusts, of which teams are in financial difficulty and which teams are in FFP difficulty. And so, like, Conor Gallagher is not really a great fit for the things that we're looking at. Conor Gallagher would be an upgrade on Sarr at the eight, I think, quite clearly. And I think has quite a bit of upside as well. It's just like that the eight is obviously not the position you would target to upgrade on this team. But if you get him for really cheap, like, sure, get an upgrade for really cheap. And there,
make,
not, now there's
make
a number
Chelsea
of reports,
worse at the same time. So
now there's a number of reports about Spurs looking at players on Barcelona. Like, Vitor Roque's agent is fighting with Xavi, and, you know, Barcelona fans have insane ideas about Rafinha, and maybe those guys can be gotten for cheap. And like, maybe they can't, like, they, you don't target them if you can't get them, but like, if you can, if there's value you can find, like, they should just go get it. I kind of think that's what happened with Werner. Like, they discovered that there was value there. Like, this guy is available for just like picking up his wages. So sure, let's just go get him. And I think that those things are going to come up in the summer as well. And because of where the team is, like, they're not trying to find, like, what's the one piece that gets this team to the title. We've got time, and that means that you can be more opportunistic as things come up in the market.
I will say, I think Spurs fans, like, in the discourse among Spurs fans, like, I think Rafinha is very underrated. Like, a guy who I was not super thrilled about a few years ago, but after watching him at Barcelona in particular, it's like, yeah, okay. Like, he's 28 or whatever the hell he is, but, like, let's fucking do that. Like, I mean, I would be very happy to bring him to Spurs. Ben, you look like,
yeah, I mean, he was so good at Leeds. I feel like that's a crazy opinion to have, I guess.
Oh, I mean, you know, you got to do it on a wet, cold night at Zaragoza. So.
Right. I mean, I think that's the other thing, is another part of it is the age profile of the squad. We have a squad that is a lot of young guys who we're hoping will be ready to run in like 2-3 years. And like, this is a title team then. And a lot of guys like Madison Richarlison's Son, who are older than that. And so we need to bridge those 2-3 years with guys who are good enough now and also get younger guys who will be good enough when the rest of the team is peaking. You know, we like a lot of our young talent will be better a year from now, 2 years from now, just without anything else really happening. And that's part of the assessment is, you know, yeah, maybe Rafinha or Jack Grealish or someone can be got for cheap and is old and we'll have to replace them in 2 years. But if they're available and they're cheap, then you buy them now and get good now. And then you can be opportunistic about, you know, younger players you can project on and get good later.
It would be really nice if we could really leverage like FFP shit to like really make a difference. Like if we get like an Ezoc or something, like that would be fucking incredible. And I would like love to have it happen. I don't know. It's interesting. Like I hope there's a lot of opportunity this summer. And I think, you know, that does balance out the sort of the last few weeks. It seems like we have a little bit more work to do than we thought we did. You know, there is an opportunity there, especially given our healthy financial position. One last thing I want to talk about before we wrap it up. Bayern Munich got eliminated in pretty hilarious fashion from the Champions League today against Real Madrid. Did you guys have any feelings about this, watching our former captain, one of our own, really take it on the chin in this match? Michael.
Two of our former captains.
That's right. Two of our former captains got eliminated at once, two for the price of one. I mean, do you have any lingering, like, Michael, do you have any lingering sympathy or support or bitterness for Harry Kane as you watch this happen to Bayern Munich?
My rooting interest was simply a hater's interest in seeing Real Madrid get footballed out of the Champions League. I wanted that like quite badly. And so I was annoyed that it didn't happen. I don't know. Harry and Eric are fine. Whatever.
I had the haters' interest the other way. It wasn't even like...
Because Real Madrid were so good. They were about to lose a game where they were so good. And like, I'm just sick of the like devil magic thing. And like, they just gone and won this game normally, fine. They were better. They were much better. But I'm really, really sick of the devil magic thing. I remember them not winning the Champions League for years and years and years. It was this humongous thing. And like now it's just like, oh, everyone knows how to win at Real Madrid. Like, no, like a few years ago, like 10 years ago, they couldn't. I'm very annoyed at it and I wanted it to end. Ah, well, maybe. But if Dortmund do it in the final, it'd be even funnier. So I've got that going for me.
That would be pretty funny. I just did not want to live through like the Harry Kane lifting a Champions League. Eric Dyer was written off by Ange Postecoglou. Now, I just did not like need that in my life. So I'm very happy it won't be in my life. And, you know, go on, Luka Modric. Ben, how did you feel watching Harry and Eric crash out of the Champions
League? I have an academic question real quick. If Dortmund wins the Champions League, does that mean the sixth place team in Germany gets it? Or does another country get the coefficient spot? Because they are currently in fifth. And would be qualifying for the Champions League through that. They weren't. I don't know. They're going to give six Champions League places to German teams. That's crazy.
Well, the issue would be if they came in sixth, not if they came in fifth. Because if they come in fifth, like in the same way that, like, you know, if when Manchester United wins the Champions League, like the fifth place, the it doesn't give another spot to England.
Right, but would they give a sixth
if they
spot?
Won it from sixth?
No, if they won it from sixth. Either way, you're giving six spots to Germany. That's crazy,
right? If they finish sixth and they win the Champions League, I think Germany gets six spots.
Jesus Christ!
I would like to see it.
Yeah, I was about to say you are the type of fan who would enjoy
that. There's some gymnastic where it's like, okay, well, they can only have five max, and then the coefficient means the next team with the coefficient gets the fifth spot. We can follow
Italy or something.
I'm sure there's someone who's got a new coefficient explainer.
Yeah, I want to learn about this.
Like it used to be, like that's how Spain had five because Sevilla winning in from Europa League. So it'd be the same thing.
Right. But six is a lot of teams from one country. It's very silly. Anyway, about Harry Kane. No, I was not rooting actively for his downfall. I think it is funny that, like, literally everybody who leaves Spurs goes and wins a trophy the next season. Like, that's just, like, a law of the universe. And for it to not happen to the best player to ever play for Spurs, to go to
a... Well, to the guy who explicitly left Spurs
to win a trophy and was at a club that won a trophy, that won the Bundesliga every year for a decade and were just as good as they've ever been. He had his best ever personal season and it still wasn't enough. Like, it is funny. And I do enjoy that. But I also, like, I like Harry Kane. He gave a lot of good memories to us. Like, I don't know. It is a little sad that, like, I feel good. I enjoyed Bale and Modric winning Champions Leagues with Real Madrid. Like, I do not begrudge them that. I know that was a little different, but...
Yeah, I guess that always felt different to me. Like, that felt like graduating. Like, maybe this is going to sound probably stupid. That felt like graduating to me. Harry Kane leaving felt a lot more cynical. Like, it felt like a very... Like, yeah, Spurs aren't going to win the Champions League anytime soon. I understand that. But, like... You know, like, he'd been to a Champions League final at Spurs. Like, you know, he had this whole one of our own, like, homegrown bullshit that surrounded him. And that, like, that he left, not just to leave and go to a bigger team, but went to a club where it was like, I am going to fucking win trophies now. I am tired of hearing about this. Like, I don't know. It definitely, I was not a hater when it came to Bale and Modric in the way that I, like, definitely am with Harry Kane. Or at least much more with Harry Kane. Which probably speaks poorly of my personality, yep. But, you know, there it is.
That's right. Being a hater is really in right now. This is a good week to be a hater.
On that note, it's time to wrap it up. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on Twitter at MC of A. They can find my podcast where I do, you know, more than once a month at Double Pivot, patreon.com/DoublePivot. And the Expecting Goals newsletter, expectinggoals.com, is not dead. I am working very hard on it. I'm going to get some newsletters out. It's going to be a lot of fun if you want to, you know, folks here who maybe, like, read my stuff when I was blogging on Cartilage Free Captain. That's the vision, is I'm better at this now. I'm more professional at it now, but it's the same stuff. Like, really trying to just ask basic questions about soccer and learn more about soccer from the numbers. That's what I'm trying to do with it. And I'm very hopeful about the stuff I've got coming out in the next 2 months.
And you should feel good about it because Michael has, you know, Michael's made a commitment to be on this podcast more often, which he's keeping. So he's going to make his commitment to that blog, which you also keep. So you should check it out. Mm-hmm. Or his newsletter. Sorry, I called it a blog. But,
you know, it's a blog.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
It's a blog, Ben, that gets delivered to your inbox if you want it.
Like, Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs. Not tweeting very often these days, but I'm there.
Good to know. Good to know. You can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079. You can find our podcast at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheel Deal Radio. If you made it this far, I don't know. Tell us why you think Ange is going to get fired. I'm curious if anyone's stuck with it this long. For Ben, for Michael, for Brian, wherever he is, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.